how do you want to be remembered? What matters to you in this whole discussion of what do you want people to think of?
I've always said that I wanted to be remembered as a player that didn't waste a moment. Welcome to the Kobe Show, take two. Didn't waste a day.
Kobe, Kobe, Kobe.
And I felt extremely blessed by the God-given talent. But at the same time, I didn't take it for granted at all. So if I could be remembered as a person that was born with a lot of talent, but did everything he could to try to overachieve, and lived every day as if he was the 12th guy on the bench, I think that's a very powerful message to have, and something that hopefully the players that are now and players that'll come later choose to embody as well.
Welcome to a very special edition of The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I'm alongside two of Kobe's former teammates, NBA champions Matt Barnes, Robert Horry. Today we are celebrating the legacy of Kobe Bryant, who, of course, 1 year ago today died tragically along with his daughter Gianna and seven others. And coming up on the show, we are going to have a number of people who were part of Kobe and Gianna's lives joining us, plus numerous current NBA stars reflecting on the first time they faced Kobe in a game. We've been working on this project for weeks. We cannot wait to share it with you. But first, there was no one like him. I've worked in this business for more than 25 years. I have covered everyone from Muhammad Ali to Michael Jordan, from Joe Montana to Tom Brady, from Serena Williams to Tiger Woods. And I can tell you for sure, there has never been anyone quite like Kobe Bean. He could burn with intensity 1 minute and make mischief the next. He was wildly creative, but at the same time, maddeningly precise. He was not perfect. He had flaws. He did things that he would come to deeply regret. But he also understood that what you did next, how you move forward, that mattered deeply. And he made the absolute most of every minute, every day, every year that he was with us. I actually saw him not that long before he died. And I remember so clearly that day how we were joking about having crossed the threshold of having known each other for more than half our lives, and what that meant about how old we had both gotten. Of course, now, all I can think about is how young he was when he was taken from us. How young that sweet, funny, smart, talented girl was, and what a tragedy it is for the family that was left behind. And to that end, we want to make clear that over these next 2 hours, we are keeping front and center the words of Vanessa Bryant, who recently posted on Instagram that she knew today would be full of remembrances of her late husband. She wrote, quote, "I want to thank everyone that has handled their media coverage respectfully. To everyone else, please reconsider your news story and look at your footage through the eyes of their children, spouse, parents, siblings, and family. Celebrate their lives, not the day they lost them." So that is what we are going to do today. We are going to celebrate the extraordinary. And we're not the only ones. Last night, Kyrie Irving arrived at his game wearing a Kobe number 8 jersey. And he told the cameraman, "You know who I'm rocking tonight." Robert, Matt, I know this day has been on the calendar. You knew it was coming. But Robert, why don't we start with you? What do you remember about your friend today? What's it bringing up for you?
You know, for me, I got to know Kobe when he was a rookie. And I got traded to the Lakers, and it was all this hype around this high school kid. And I'm like, okay, hadn't seen him play yet. So I get into practice, and it's a shoot around, and he's going 1,000 miles an hour. And I'm looking at him like, dude, slow down. He's like, I gotta get better. And that was just his whole mentality. He wanted to get better each and every day. And I'm looking at him like, dude, it's shoot around. Nobody's going 100 miles per hour. But the thing about him is you just knew he was destined to be great because he had that energy and that work ethic like no other. And for me to have that moment to see what he could become and to have a lot of conversations with this guy and share some of my knowledge with him. And I remember when we finally had that first one-on-one, the first thing out of his mouth was, tell me about Dream's footwork. I'm like, I'm doing all right. Thanks for asking, you know. But it was just that. He wanted to get better.
Nice to see you too, Kobe.
Yeah, he wanted to learn from the guy that had the best footwork in the game. And that's just who he was. His whole mental was to get better and to try to be the best at that game. And all I could do was sit back and just respect him and just watch him and, believe it or not, learn from him. Because even though you're a vet coming off two championships, you watching this guy put in his work each and every day and you learning from him, like, oh, I can't let this young fella outwork me. So you just wanted to go on and move on.
Yeah. I mean, mine is kind of post-career. Obviously, you know, our battles that have been well documented, but just the person outside of basketball, Kobe, the man, the father, the businessman, and how, although basketball was over, he still attacked everything with that same passion, desire, and focus. The way he fathered, how adamant he was about trying to put his last 20 years behind him, his greatness in basketball, and be known for what was next. He was always trying to innovate. He was always trying to get better, get himself better. Oh, you guys found this footage.
This was you, of course. So just with your sons.
I mean, really, Kobe. You know, he was Uncle Kobe to the boys, you know, and like I said, since when we became teammates, the twins were like three, and he started, you know, treating them like they were his own, bringing them shoes all the time, hugging them, talking to them, bringing them in the locker room. So he was just a special person. Obviously, we know how amazing on the court he was, but he did just as amazing things off the court as well.
I loved you talking over the past year a little bit about how you guys were these great rivals, right? And of course, we all know the flinch video, the whole thing. But that when you did become teammates, the kinship you found with each other, stages of your lives you were going through and just sort of...
It was an instant brotherhood. You know, we were both going through things in our personal life and we really just bonded. Practice, after practice, you know, post games, going out and grabbing a drink or grabbing some dinner. And really, like I said, getting the chance to really learn each other as men outside of the basketball court. And that's what my fondest memories of him was, and just really getting a chance to know, because Rob will tell you, he doesn't let too many people in. And if he allows to let you in, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, once he lets you in, it's a wonderful thing, like you said. And there's so many moments that we share privately, and it's amazing to me that he has moments with everybody, and it's different.
Right.
Every story is different. It's almost
amazing,
like he put everybody in the category. Says, okay, I'm gonna talk with you about kids, you with cars, you about footwork, and to me, it's almost like it was three or four different Kobes out there, that he was in different places at different times, because you hear the stories, you're like, I was around that time. How did he get there? What is it going on? But it's so many stories. I think. Having one of my other favorite stories is just when you have those long plane rides,
right?
And you have the moments just sit down and you talk about everything outside of basketball. You know, I talked to him about his times growing up as a kid in a foreign country, and he talked about me growing up in the South and how it was, and you know, and a little thing, and all of a sudden he's like, dude, you don't play spades? I'm like, every black person in America plays spades. You don't know how to play? And you're sitting there and you're teaching this guy how to play spades. You know, it was just like a big brother kinship. And it was so many memories like that, that you sit back on a day like today and you just think about it. Even the last memory I have of him is meeting him at Mamba Academy a week before this tragedy happened, and just laughing and joking and talking about everything other than basketball. That was my favorite part.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny too, post-career, Matt, as you say, I mean, he was so focused, as we know, for so much of his time. And Robert, you playing with him from the moment he stepped onto a basketball court in the NBA for the first time, saw that development, right? Tracy McGrady has talked a lot about how they used to be so close, and then there was basically a 10-year period where Kobe was just so tunnel vision, so consumed by the game. And then that ended. And even in the later days of his playing career, and then certainly post-basketball, it was almost like he was starving to me. To me, it felt like he was starving for all the things he had missed in that tunnel vision time. And as you say, Robert, he wanted to be everywhere. He would love to sit and talk to you for 45 minutes. He would do everything. And I loved getting to see that part of him. And I think that's part of what makes this so hard, is that he had so much left to do. And Gianna, as you said, Matt, you were around each other's kids. I got to be around Gianna a few times in a way that just really get to know her and know how special she was. She could have ended up being the greatest women's basketball player ever. And Diana Taurasi will tell you that, too. And just the potential that we lost. And I think it's a great, not that we need it, but today is a great reminder to hug your kids, hug your family.
Always.
And remember that the impact you have on everyone around you matters. Because I think that's what we see when we see all of this outpouring of love and affection for Kobe from other NBA players, from people here in Los Angeles, where he was literally the symbol of the city for 20 years, for people who knew his beautiful family, his daughters, his wife, Vanessa, the impact you have, the way you touch people in every interaction, in every moment, it matters, and it mattered with Kobe, and we'll be talking about that through the rest of this show. In fact, coming up, you will hear LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and many more talking about what Kobe meant to them from the very first time they got to play against him. First, though, right after this break, we're going to check in on current Lakers, right? Beat the Cavs last night to remain a perfect 10-0 on the road. LeBron scored 46. Credit his performance to trash-talking from a Cavs employee. I will explain all of this after the break. Got to get myself back together to talk about basketball, guys. I'll get there. All right, I now want to welcome in one of the biggest Lakers fans in the world. Also, he happened to be the man that Kobe Bryant asked to do the national anthem on the night of his last game. They had a great relationship. Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers here to help us celebrate Kobe. Thank you so much, friend, for joining us. We really appreciate it. I'll just start asking you the same question I asked Robert and Matt. What memories are brought up for you on a day like today?
It's a flood of memories. And, you know, waking up today and realizing it was the anniversary of his death. Like, I mean, firstly, just that this entire year has gone by without him, and what a touchstone he was for our city on a multitude of levels, you know, as an athlete. But as an athlete, the amazing things that he did, the transcendent acts on the basketball court, are, it's not so much for me personally what he did, it's how what he did made me feel. And I think that's a universal thing. It's what it made us all feel.
Right.
It's like when someone dedicates themselves to a craft so completely and transcends so profoundly, it satisfies a yearning in all of us, because every one of us yearns to be better. We yearn to be better as human beings, as friends, as you know, as lovers, as whatever field we're in, whether it's arts or academics or athletics or whatever our labor is of life. We all yearn to be better. When someone shows us like how far you can take it, it's inspiring and it touches us. And you know, for someone like me and for the many of us that are basketball fanatics, we know that basketball is a vehicle for the most profound expression of human spirit. And Kobe embodied that to the furthest extent that we could ever imagine. And I'm so grateful for him. And I can't help but think back to that day a year ago when he passed and how absolutely devastating it was to get that news. And, you know, because we were watching this guy evolve, not just, you know, as an athlete, he evolved through his career from being so arrogant in the beginning to bringing in his teammates in a more complete way as his career evolved, but also as a human being, you know?
Yeah.
Just, it became warmer and kinder and more inclusive. And then, you know, after he retired, all the work he did with his daughter and you know, women's basketball and bringing attention to it, and how important that was, you know, gender equity in sports. And to think back to that day, like you're sitting there devastated that Kobe left us, and then we hear that his beautiful little girl was gone. And it was, you know, absolutely crushing. And, you know, it's a time for memory, and it's a very solemn thing.
No, that's all. Yeah, that's just, it's so eloquently put. The idea of what he made you feel, that Maya Angelou quote, right? That is Kobe to a T. And I do want to honor Vanessa's wishes by focusing on points in his life. And it is funny, for all the championships, for all the great moments, that last night, Flea, that last night, I feel just so honored to have been in the building for his final performance. And you did a lot more than that. He asked you to be the one to do the national anthem that night. What did that mean to you? And just also to see him drop 60 in his exit. What do you remember about that night?
That I wanted to do a good job for him, to honor him. And then it was, you know, just thinking about his whole career. I met him before he ever played a game for the Lakers after they drafted him. And, you know, I didn't know Kobe well at all. I was, you know, I'd met him a few times, and always, he was always kind and generous with his time with me. But I just wanted to honor him and to do the best at my craft, you know, that I could, and as the best that I could do for him, and to channel God, to channel the spirits, and to be a conduit for all that is good about humanity, you know, and do my best as an evolving person to honor him. That's all I ever wanted to do in that regard.
Well, you've done that certainly and more. Thank you so much for spending time with us today. Yeah. Good to see you again. And I know that Kobe's in your heart, not just today, but every day. Thank you, Play. We appreciate it.
Okay, Rachel. Bye-bye.
LeBron James absolutely went off in his first game back in his old home arena in 2 years. James dropping 46 on his former team. 21 of those points came in the fourth quarter, where he outscored the entire Cavaliers team by himself. And you can see here just how efficient he was, especially from range. He made 7 of his 11 threes. Now, as mentioned, he turned it on in the fourth, which came about a little extra motivation from a special spectator who let LeBron hear it after missing a shot close to the end of the third. Take a listen here.
Yeah, I know who he is. You know, he's part of the front office group. He was really excited about me missing, you know, that shot a little bit more extra than I would have liked. But, you know, he got a roof for his team, obviously. And he was, you know, he showcased that. So, you know, I knew I had another quarter. And the fourth quarter is my favorite.
Matt, come on. Someone who works for the Cavs should know better, right?
I mean, there's always that one person when a joke is told that kind of laughs a little bit too hard. You know what I mean? And I kind of feel like even if they didn't do nothing, you're going to be the reason why. He was definitely the reason why LeBron went for 21 in the fourth quarter and outscored the whole Cavs team. So, you know, he looked for anything similar to what Kobe did. Looked for anything for motivation, and he definitely found it.
The real part about it, look at the head snap. It was a quick head snap.
Like, right?
Oh, no, you did just
like
and then
laugh.
He looked back
like
at him
again.
He
knew who laughed. Yeah. Exactly. Like I heard
I got
that
you. I got you. You want to wake up? You want to wake me up? Right. I got something for you right here. And he went off, you know, true LeBron style in his building, the building LeBron built.
There you go. That's all I got to say. And look, our Dave McMenamin reporting, you're not going to sneak much past Dave. Dave found out it was Jason Hillman in the Cavs front
office. Good job, Jason.
That LeBron had the interaction with. So, yeah, I don't know how he feels this morning, but there you go. We will be right back after a quick break. But up next, Woj reporting the NBA is still looking to hold an All-Star game this season, potentially in Atlanta. Is the idea of this something, nothing, or everything? Stick around to find out. We will also, of course, continue to be honoring Kobe throughout this show. A lot more to come on that front over the next 2 hours. Welcome back to this special edition of The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I'm joined by Robert Ori, Matt Barnes. And guys, we are honoring Kobe Bryant all day today. You can see the set. You can see everything else. We'll have some special guests coming up throughout the show, including some amazing Mamba memories. Right now, though, it's time to play one of our favorite games here on The Jumps. Oh, yes, you know it. Something, nothing, or everything. First, Adrian Wojnarowski reporting NBA and players are negotiating the possibility of an All-Star game on March 7th in Atlanta. Chris Paul reportedly wants to use the game to provide support to HBCU schools. COVID-19 relief. Remember, the league previously canceled the original All-Star Game festivities in Indianapolis. Matt, do you think the NBA considering bringing back an All-Star Game in a pandemic is something, nothing, or everything?
I think it's everything. I think they'll keep, obviously, safety first. And with Chris Paul, the head of the Players Association, he's always thinking ahead. So, obviously, it's a great cause for the HBCUs and the COVID relief, but also for the guys that it could possibly could be their last or someone's first. You know what I mean? So you never want to take those moments away. You know, some people are never fortunate enough to make it. So I agree. Obviously, keeping safety first is at the utmost. But, you know, the fans love it. And the games themselves have been so amazing lately. I would love to see an All-Star game.
I totally agree with Matt. It's just everything. And I think the one thing that it really is going to be impressive if they're able to do anything for the HBCUs, because I know this is a passion of Chris Paul's and for the NBA to step up, especially during this time of Black Lives Matter movement, it'll be the perfect platform for you to just say, hey, look at us. This is what's going on in the country. Still, but we want to show our support for the HBCU and more importantly for the COVID-19 people who are supporting that and helping out with that.
And the fact that it's in Atlanta, you know, the blackest city, of the United States. I love Atlanta, you know what I mean? So it's a perfect setting. And like I said, for the reasons, you know, that Chris Paul laid out, I think it's a great idea.
I mean, Chris's support, right, of the HBCU movement and sort of what he's done to bring attention to, hey, it's not just these universities are here or the support they should get, but young athletes, guys from his AAU program directing them toward those schools has been really amazing. I appreciate all the reasons why everyone wants to have an all-star game this year, but I am concerned. I'm going to say, I don't think we can just gloss over health and safety here. And you have had, I sit here every day and I announce cancellation after postponement after postponement. And we have a situation here where we have 30 pods, right, in the NBA. And those pods in, say, the two-week period somebody may be exposed to COVID, right, is kind of what we look at, 10 days to whatever. They may interact with one, two, three, four other pods, right, in games that they play. And we've seen the reaction of that, right? The Wizards, who got something maybe after contact with the Celtics, and then it knocks out their schedule, and then it knocks out someone else's schedule. That's when you're only mixing three or four pods in any given 10 to 14-day period. What happens when you are taking 20 guys, you know, 24 guys from 20 different pods, putting them all together with no quarantine on the way in or on the way out because the All-Star break is only 5 days, sticking them together in Atlanta, which, as you note, is a city that guys like. Are you telling them they have to stay locked in their hotel rooms the whole time? Are you telling them they can't interact with anybody?
The logistics will be tough, I think.
You're telling people they can't exchange jerseys or have handshakes or hugs because they're coming two separate pods, right, between teams. Now you're going to stick 24 of them all together and
in
then send them right back to their individual pods. So, look, the NBA has been fantastic on health and safety. I trust the leadership of the NBA. I really, really do. So if they have a plan for this, I am excited to hear it. But, again, as someone who every day sits here and talks about COVID's impact on the league, I am curious how they would pull this off. And if they can, I'm thrilled to see it. If they can't, I hope there is another way that we can give money support to some of the causes that
we just
mentioned.
They can always just put it at the end of, end of the season.
That too, absolutely. And I do love that Elon ending they did in the last game.
Yeah.
So fun. I loved the All-Star game in Chicago. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see it if safety can be taken into account for. All right, let's talk about the Nets beating the Heat for the second time in 3 days on Monday. But in those two games where Kyrie, KD, and Harden played, it was James that has taken the fewest shots, only 19 total in two games, along with 19 assists. Here's Harden's post-game describing this newfound balance for him.
I was in a role for 8 years, you know, controlling the ball, dominating the ball. Now it's a different experience for me, but it's still great. You got to pick and choose when to be aggressive, when to get your shooters going, when, you know, to let KD and Kyrie get going. Once we get a rhythm in that flow and we kind of start to feel, you know, each other out more, our team will have a lot more flowing throughout the course of the game. Right now, we're trying to find it, and we show really good glimpses of it, but it'll be more consistent.
All right, so Robert Harden with as many assists as shot attempts against Miami. Do you think that's something, nothing, or everything?
I think I'm going to go with nothing on this one because this marriage is still in the honeymoon, and he's still trying to figure things out. So I'm going to say nothing right now because they played the Heat without Jimmy Butler. They played a Heat that's a good team, but they're missing their top dog. So I'm going to say nothing because when you beat a team that doesn't have all this firepower and you still win, so I'm still going to say nothing.
I think it's something from a standpoint of this is kind of the evolution of James. You know, we've saw, but if you think about it, his early days in OKC in the fourth quarter, he was the playmaker for Russ and KD. So this is the next step in James's evolution, and I like it. Everyone thought that Kyrie would be the third wheel at the second seat. Kyrie's moved to the scoring two guard in honor of Kobe. He's a scoring two guard. We know what KD does. So James is able to get everyone else going, but also get his shot at any other time. And like I said, I just think that's an evolution of him. My only concern about this team is on the defensive end, but offensively, they're playing against themselves, trying to get better every single night. So I don't really care about who the opponent is.
And you guys both know that progression, right? You've saw it in the league, both I'm sure with yourselves, but also with all the guys you came in contact with over the years. You start out just wanting to make it as an NBA player. Then as you get better, as James Harden did in Oklahoma City, we know there was a little bit of like, well, I could do this. I could start. I could have my own team. I could do these things. And then he spent years in Houston showing us that. The MVP, the individual accolades, the scoring titles, where he moved up in the record books behind Wilt in terms of per season averages. And then after a while, you're like, well, I really would like to win a title, and I'm going to sacrifice to that level to get to win one, and at least so far he's doing that.
I just wonder how long, like, it's good now, and he seems happy with it now. If it stays at this pace where he's getting 10 shots, 12 shots a game, I wonder if he can stay happy throughout the season knowing that he's sacrificing for the greater of the team.
That's right. That's my thoughts.
Because you guys have seen that, too. At the beginning, everyone's happy. Mm-hmm. A little honeymoon.
When that loss, the first loss or two losses in a row hit you, and you're like, hey, what about me?
We'll see. Mm. We'll find out. I now want to get to some very, very good news. The Pacers announced today Caris LeVert underwent successful surgery to treat renal cell carcinoma that was on his left kidney. That was first detected during a physical when Caris was traded to Indiana from Brooklyn. No further treatment needed. Caris is expected to make a full recovery, although he will be out indefinitely. He said that he thinks this trade could have saved his life, guys, that he would never have had this thorough a physical just randomly in the middle of the season. And this kind of cancer can spread quickly. Wow. So it's pretty remarkable, and certainly remarkable of the Pacers to say they found this out and they didn't void the trade. They said, we believe in him. We want to keep him. We know he will eventually be healthy, and we want him on the team.
Yeah, praying for him and his family right now. Cancer's no joke. I lost my mom to it. So this trade was a blessing in disguise for him.
Yeah, it's a huge blessing because think about it. When you get traded someone, they're going to do an in-depth physical.
Yes, different.
And so happy they did it because he was playing and putting up numbers in jerseys.
Just dropped 40.
So,
it
was a blessing in disguise. I'm so happy that he's going to be fine and he can get back on the court and showing us the very talented athlete that he is.
Yes, congratulations to him and his family. We are, as Matt says, thinking of him. All right, coming up, a man who played against Kobe in the NBA 37 times. Zach Randolph joins the Jump to talk his memories of Kobe and the inspiration he provided to Zeebo as a father. Stick with us.
Oh, yeah, his daughter played with G.
Here's what the Jump recommends for today. On ESPN.com, Dave McMenamin going deep inside how January 26, 2020 was processed by the Lakers. Remember, they had that long flight back from Philly to L.A. This Jump special celebrating Kobe continues right after this break.
I've always said that I wanted to be remembered as a player that didn't waste a moment, didn't waste a day, did everything he could to try to overachieve.
We lost probably the world's greatest Laker, world's greatest basketball player.
We celebrate the kid that came here at 18 years of age, retired at 38, and became probably the best dad that we've seen over the last 3 years.
To watch him grow, the legacy he established when he left, Kobe, will resonate in the city of Los Angeles forever.
No words can describe how I feel about you guys. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. God, I love you guys.
Joining us at this time, two-time NBA All-Star, the 2004 Most Improved Player, and the man with one of the best nicknames in NBA history, Zeebo Zach Randolph. Welcome back to The Jump. So good to have you here with us. And much like Kobe Bryant, you were a fierce competitor on the court. But I loved a recent interview you did with Mark Stein of The New York Times talking about how much better you got to know Kobe after your careers were over. In fact, you asked him to coach your daughter, McKinley. How did that change your perception of him, your relationship with him after he retired? I love that you have this window into his post-career life.
I mean, it was great. I mean, you know, she wanted to play. We're moving out here and, you know, I reached out to Kobe and he's like, you know, hey, come in and, you know, let's see how it goes and, you know, how she mixed in with the girls and it was good. You know, it was good. She came in, she fitted in well and, you know, he worked her and he bleed in her, man. And it was great. You know what I mean? And just, from, you know, the learning standpoint and it's just everything he taught her and, you know, just that mentality, you know, that mama mentality and, you know, being confident and being a winner.
Zach, do you have any Coach Kobe stories? I know that he got a chance to work with the Twins, and I asked how often he practiced his team, and he said he had the girls running the triangle offense, working out 5 or 6 days a week. So I know you were living by me in Encino. He's out in Orange County. Do you have any crazy Coach Kobe stories? Because I heard he used to put those girls through some things.
Yeah, he had put, when he first got there, he put McKinley through a 16, and she didn't know what a 16 was. So After practice, he got, you know, all the other girls down there, they shooting and doing whatever. And he like, come on, no, I'm McKinley. You got to hit the sideline. It's 2B16s. Man, she did it. You know, that was her first time ever doing a 16. And she was like, Dad. She's like, I wasn't expecting that. I was like, I know, that's that Mamba, you know. And, you know, but not only that, he got her in the best shape. You know right. what I mean? She was in great shape. And, you know what I mean? When he talked, you know, they listened. You know, it was like, you know, it was mesmerized, you know, by being coached by one of the greatest players to ever play this game.
Absolutely.
All right, Z-Bo, here's the thing. Are you surprised, because I know I was, that Kobe wanted to coach? You know, guys that good, they usually can't coach because they think they expect everybody to be as great as they are. So what do you expect of that? What do you think of that?
Man, I mean, it was great. I mean, you know, I mean, taking his time, you know, taking his time out of retirement and spending, that's what it was like by the retirement, was them girls. You know, he was dedicated to them. And, you know, they want every one of them had a college, you know, they wanted to go to. And Kobe's like, you know, you want to go here? You want to go there? That's what we're going to do. We're going to get you there. And they worked for it. And, you know, that was his life from girls, man.
I love the idea of you two who went head-to-head so many times. You battled him, Z-Bo, more than I. We have lists of who he played against the most times, and you were near the top of that list. And that you guys became these friends post-retirement. Watching your two little girls is so awesome. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. We're going to have you back on the show when you can actually come into the studio, because we play a game called What Were You Thinking?
Appreciate
and there's really no one else that would be better to find out what you were thinking during certain of those moments. So thank you, Z-Bo. Ooh. So much. Coming up on this show, we're going to have today's players talking about Kobe Bryant and the first time they faced him. You will hear from LeBron, KD, so many more on their first matchups with Kobe. These are great stories. And to get you ready, here's Vince Carter talking about his first time. Take a look.
The very first time playing against Kobe, I was in high school. We were playing pickup, preparing, because it was his first day to our AAU team. He was confident then, so the Kobe Bryant you see now was the Kobe Bryant at 14, 15 years old, and you knew he was destined for the NBA, and you knew he had that ability. I mean, he was shooting half-court shots back then. I mean, he actually got better and locked in and lasered as a killer on the floor, and boy, man, I tell you, it was a proud moment, which made great battles to play against him.
If you guys can understand that, then I'm doing my job as a father.
Kobe was the MVP of girl dads. He taught them how to be brave and how to keep pushing forward when things get tough. He would sing them silly songs and continue making them laugh. He loved being Gianna's basketball coach.
Gigi pulls here, she's gonna laugh at
you. Our youngest Gianna is 12 and she's practicing playing basketball every single day.
One dribble step back, that should be labeled unfair.
I asked if he wanted more children, and without hesitation, he said I would have 5 more girls if I could.
Come on.
I'm a girl dad.
Good girl.
If I had the power to turn back time, I would never use it. I'd think about it. Because then every moment that you go through means absolutely nothing, but you can always go back and do it again. So it loses its flavor, it loses its beauty. When things are final, you know, moments won't ever come again.
I can't believe it's come to an end. To my family.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Very merry birthday to you.
Thank you guys for all your sacrifice. You guys will always be in my heart.
Man. Those pictures of Kobe and Gigi, I don't know. It's really hard. At this time, I would like to welcome in someone who knew both of them so well. If we're going to be here on this day, I'm so thrilled to be joined by so many people who knew Kobe at his best, and that was often when he was with his little girls. We now have NBA and WNBA skills coach, co-founder of the Through the Lens skills training app with Carmelo Anthony, and coach to Gianna Bryant on Team Mamba, Alex Bazell, joins The Jump. Thanks so much for stopping by, Alex. I'm really thrilled that you were able to spend time with us today, because Gigi and the girls from Team Mamba, it was amazing watching them together. And we were just hearing from Zeebo how Kobe wanted you guys to be running them through, you know, skills drills, yoga sessions, the full boat of training. What was it like to coach Gigi Bryant, knowing you had the ultimate athlete dad there working with you with her?
Well, you know what? It was an interesting relationship that we formed. You know, like most parents, and I've worked with younger players in the past, of course, most parents, they try to live through their children. And with Kobe, it was so unique because you knew he had all the knowledge and experience in the world that he could pass on to Gigi and her teammates. But he felt this need to have this divide of, at some point, he just wanted to be dad and he wanted to have another voice in there. And, you know, for him to trust me with that, that certainly meant a lot to me.
And of course, we spend so much time talking about Kobe because he lived his life in public. But Gigi was starting to, and we were starting to see what those of you who knew her so well know about her, how fierce she was, how determined she was, how funny and sweet she was. Can you tell us a little bit more about Gigi on the day-to-day? Because the potential that was lost on that day a year ago, it's gaping.
Yeah, you know, obviously, who she was as a player, she was able to do things that, quite honestly, a lot of NBA players couldn't do. Like, she could shoot a fadeaway over her left shoulder as a righty, which, to give you an idea, you know, if I start working with an NBA player, it usually takes them 3 to 4 weeks before it's even respectable. So for her to have that at that young of an age, she had so much of her dad in her, and quite honestly, a lot of Vanessa too. You know, she mm-hmm. was so fierce that even Kobe had to try to get her to back off a little bit.
Wait, excuse me? Are you serious? Come
yeah,
on.
I know. Yeah. And that was a sight to behold. So, you know, she was as competitive as ever, but as you mentioned, when she was off the court, she was such a sweet girl. And you could just tell how much her teammates loved her.
And we know what Kobe's style was as a player. What about when he was talking to Gianna about what he wanted or what she would say back to him? What were they like in terms of that competitiveness? Because I know Vanessa has called Gigi kind of Kobe's little clone in that way.
Yeah, well, Kobe was so great about, he wanted her to find her own way. He didn't always want to give her the answers. And he wanted to just pique her curiosity. And that's what he did with all the girls on the team. So to give him that leeway, it honestly changed the way I thought about how I approach training younger athletes. Hmm. And, you know, he talked about it in a scenario of, if think about a young kid that's learning a new language, how much quicker they can pick stuff up than maybe someone your age. And that's how he went about training. And he was like, let's just throw everything at them, see what they can absorb and see what they naturally want to kind of pick up on their own. So just the way he went about it was so unique in that standpoint, because when you accomplish so much at whatever it is, you generally want to force your ideas or your way of what made you successful onto the next generation. And he kind of let everyone find their own way, and he kind of plugged along and gave answers when he could.
And I know you have been working toward equality in hoops yourself with your own projects. And I did want to ask you kind of Kobe's impact on the women's game and women's basketball. I've talked to several WNBA players who have said they think Gigi could have ended up being the greatest women's basketball player to come. And that includes someone like Diana Taurasi, who, of course, the GOAT. Just what they thought she might be able to do both within the game and for the game. And that started with Kobe, who recognized the importance of the WNBA and the modeling that gave children about what they could do. How did you see all of that and have incorporated that into your projects as you go forward too?
Well, with any young person or professional or anyone trying to find their way, you know, the two biggest things is competitiveness and passion. And she had that at the highest level. You know, there's a lot of very talented people. There's a lot of skilled players. But if you don't want to constantly improve, if you don't aren't looking for ways to kind of reach that next level, you're always going to get capped out. And that was never an issue with Gigi. So, you know, what her potential could have been, it was really, it really came down to her. And that's probably why so many people thought she had a chance to be one of the greatest players to probably ever play women's basketball and basketball in general. And, you know, what with Kobe and I, we shared such a, I think how we got along so well is we both had very similar interests, not only in the men's game, but the women's game just as much. So, you know, what we've been trying to do, and specifically with Through the Lens, and obviously my fiance is also a WNBA player. Yep. And has accomplished a lot in her young career so far, is we've always shared that interest and feeling like if we can continue to help do our part to help elevate the women's game, then, you know, there's really something there that, that the last couple of years you've seen the momentum that it's gained, and Kobe was certainly helping that. But I think what he'd be most proud of is how many other players have stepped up to the plate, specifically in the last year.
Well, Alex Bazell, thank you so much for joining us. That perspective on Kobe, on Gigi. Being the coach of Gigi Bryant, working with Kobe Bryant, that is a tall order. And the fact that you guys had such a fantastic relationship really speaks to the time you were able to spend. So thank you for spending time with us today. We really appreciate it. And The Jump is continuing for another hour to celebrate the life of Kobe Bryant, his daughter Gianna, and the seven other victims of the crash that happened, of course, a year ago. Over the past few weeks, I've actually been talking to current NBA stars. We interviewed everyone over the past few weeks, and we wanted to celebrate Kobe's life. And what the best way to do that by starting with asking stars to reflect on the first time they played against the Black Mamba. Take a look.
The first game I played against Kobe.
The very first time I played against him.
The first time ever got, like, actually playing against him.
You remember, like, damn, like, you know, I'm on a court with Kobe, like.
I was just in awe.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I could even do it any justice, really.
It's a guy who I would tape on my wall when I lived in Spring Hill. In apartment 602. To be able to share the floor with him was like a, you know, for any kid that has aspirations or has inspiring moments from someone, it's just like a sense of awe.
I remember most just watching somebody that I literally grew up watching on YouTube.
Black Mamba strikes again!
And I remember just watching him, you know, just like, I'm really about to line up against Kobe.
I remember lining up the jump ball against Andrew Bynum and looking over and seeing, you know, Kobe. And that's when it was surreal for me. That's when I realized I was really a part of the NBA.
I think the thing that stood out most to me about playing Kobe that first time was his pregame warm-up. Why is he working out at 4 o'clock and it's a 7:30 game? By the time I finished watching his workout, I had like missed my lift. My treatment time, you know, as a young guy, you get the early slots, and once you miss it, it's over. I had missed everything. And I think for me personally, that was just a moment like in my life where it was like, yo, like I'm sitting here watching Kobe. Nothing else really mattered to me at that point.
What were you trying to do out on the court that night?
For me, not to get, you know, 50 dropped on me. My rookie year, we played against them in the playoffs. And I was just trying my best. I was just talking smack. I was just in his ear. He wasn't fazed by it.
Now at the Forum, my rookie year, we played against him, and I got switched on to him in an ISO situation. I'm, you know, scrawny, 170 pound rookie coming in, and the look he gave me was so damn disrespectful. It was crazy.
He hissed like an actual snake. You know, whenever he wanted the ball, he would make a hissing sound. And it threw me all the way off. Like, I didn't know that that was a thing.
He was just testing me. Like, he was just testing to see what I was made of. He was testing to see what type of mentality I had. And he was just testing me to see, you know, who I was as a person and what I stood for. I guess I wanted to gain his respect so much at that moment.
And he was just stone-faced, straight killer mode the whole
game.
It's down to seven. Starting to make his move for the win. He got the lead for him.
I remember we got our ass kicked. I remember that.
You know, I think I'm a pretty, you know, physical defender and all that stuff, and I'm a young pup. And I could tell you, he beat the living out of me without even having the ball.
I always tell the story. I got a switch on Kobe. He was posting me up. I blocked his shot, and the ball bounced to half court, and I went running at it full speed. It was a big moment for me because I could brag to my friends that I blocked Kobe Bryant's shot.
This guy's a blur. Kobe, deep three, got it.
He got the ball back and shot a three, and he said, "The play continues, young fella."
He says, "John Wall, get this one."
The very first time was actually here in L.A. It was my assignment to guard Kobe. I'm obviously having B. Shaw as an assistant. And B. Shaw's like jawing at him, egging him on, getting him riled up, talking mess from the bench. Here I am in the middle while all of this is going on. I was guarding him, and he, you know, he got into his back down, his patting, pump fake, and I went flying for it. You know, a young guy trying to go block his shot, I went flying for it. And he caught me in the air. He ran down, specifically ran down to where B. Shaw was, and yelled at B. Shaw, "Check the young feather for feathers."
The first time that I played against him was when I was in Chicago and he was with the Lakers. And I just remember him asking Michael Jordan all these questions on the court the whole time. But I think what ultimately made him who he was that audacity to ask Michael Jordan for pointers in his very first game against him. Think about most 18-year-olds, they'd be scared to death to go against Michael. And he was just inquisitive. It's pretty remarkable.
He was just our generation's Jordan in terms of like iconic moves, ISO stuff, fadeaways, game winners.
I try to emulate how he moved down to what he said to you guys in the media, to how he worked out before the games, what he watched. I was really try to study as much as possible. I would never told him that, but as a younger player, I was really just copying everything he did.
He's my idol growing up, and it was just a blessing to be on the same court as him and compete.
It was me and him. Nobody on that court mattered. Nothing else mattered. It was everything for me. You know, it was everything for me. It was the best moment of my life.
The best moment of his life. Thank you so much to all the players who participated. I cannot tell you guys how much fun it was to talk to everybody over these past few weeks. Thank you so much to our producer, Michael Bodmer, who put that together so, so beautifully. And I wanted to turn and ask you guys the same question, Matt. What was it like the very first time you went up against Kobe Bryant?
It was amazing because I was fresh off a call-up, but my journey starts back at UCLA when I used to sneak back into Poly Pavilion and watch him work out because, you know, early on it wasn't much. He would always try to find time to come up to UCLA, so we'd see him walking on campus and working out. And I, like, when Draymond said he sat there and just lost track of time, I completely feel that because I went there one time and just watched him for like an hour 45 work as hard as he possibly can, and it kind of, I was just like, okay, well, I'm gonna have to guard something like that one day. So first time we played was fun, but my more memories when Draymond said that was, you know, getting lost just watching him work out.
For me, having the opportunity to be there when he was a rookie and watch his growth. And I think the biggest jump was when he ended the 99 season, and then we got a new coach. We went from the Forum to Staples Center.
Mm-hmm.
And that summer, I don't know what he did, but he went in the lab and he changed his whole game up. And he became this iconic player that we all, he was good then, but he went into a whole nother mode. He went into beast mode, so to say, and he helped us win a championship. And that Kobe Bryant, and I remember like yesterday, I'm getting off the elevator. You know, you have to do those physicals, and that's when you see players. And I'm looking at his body, I'm like, dude, what did you do? He got bigger, he got stronger, he got faster, he got afro. It all came together, and it was just, to watch him go from the guy who was shooting the air ball in the playoffs against the Jazz to being this guy that took over in the finals when Shaq fouled out. And it was just amazing to be a part of that journey with him.
Well, I want to now bring in a man, one of your teammates, during Kobe's rookie year and certainly for a lot longer. Mr. Byron Scott, thank you so much, friend, for joining us. Kobe gave a great shout out to Byron in his Mamba Mentality book, mentioning how much he learned from you early in your career. So, Byron, what was it like for you the first time you faced up against Kobe in practice? Because as Robert said, he came to y'all as a young pup.
Well, you know, Big Shot knows that, you know, I mean, we had some great practices, some very competitive practice. Big Shot, big time competitor himself. Kobe at 17, 18 years old, just wouldn't back down to anybody. You know, he wanted to take that challenge. And that's why we got so close, is because he wanted to ask all these questions about the NBA and how he could take advantage of his talents. And what were people going to try to do to take advantage of him? And, you know, as a rookie, you always know people will come at you, especially vets. They're going to come at you. You got to be ready for that. They're going to try to take advantage of you. But his mentality even then was that he was going to be the best. You know, he was going to outwork everybody. You know, we all knew he had talent. That was obvious from day one. And you had to kind of guide that talent. But in the long run, we knew that talent was going to take over. And the work ethic just made him that much more special. You know, but he said from day one to me, in all the conversations that we had, that he wanted to be, you know, wanted to be one of the greatest players in the league. And I looked at him, and we, you know, eye to eye, and I said, "Man, the way you work, you will be." And he turned out being one of the greatest of all time.
You know, the thing about Kobe also, he wasn't afraid to ask questions. A lot of guys are afraid to ask questions, and Kobe would go to you if he wants to know about another player. He would ask questions. So that was the best thing about him. He was going to learn some way or another. He was going to figure it out. Yeah.
Well, I like about all three of you guys had interactions with Kobe very early and then, of course, also very late. And Byron, you were in such a crazy position. We just showed that page from Kobe's book. The photo he put up of the two of you was him hugging you. I believe that's an Andrew Bernstein special. And just thanking you for all of the conversations that you had. But that not only came when he was a young player, it came when you turned around and then coached him at the end of his career. What was that like to span the very beginning to then, of course, the very end?
You know, the last 2 years that I had in LA coaching and having KB on that team, it was the best 2 years of my life in coaching. And you know, I had some great success early, you know, with New Orleans and New Jersey. But it can't compare to the last 2 years I spent with Kobe here in LA. We got to reunite, reconnect. We spent a lot of time together. You know, I got a lot of 5 o'clock a.m. calls in the morning about like, man, do you ever sleep? You know, I mean, he was just one of those guys that, you know, was driven, and I loved that about him. And like, you know, like Robert just said, you know, wasn't afraid to ask questions. You know, and that's the thing I love about it. Even at 37 years old, you know, wasn't afraid to ask me questions about, you know, game planning, practice planning, whatever it may be. And he was just one of those guys that he just felt that every day you can learn. You know, every day you can get better as a basketball player, every day you can learn as a person. And he took that, you know, literally. And I know that's one of the reasons that he changed his number to 24, because he was always talking about, you know, you got 24 hours in a day. And that day, you know, those 24 hours, you can get better. And I love that about him because of his spirit and his passion, not only for basketball, but for life. You know, we know how much he loved his girls and his family. But the most fierce competitor I've ever been around, Magic Johnson was an unbelievable competitor in practice. You know, I've been with, you know, Big Shot when we had practice and when Kobe was 18 and how competitive he was. I know how competitive, you know, my man Matt Barnes is. I know that dude, he just goes out and he gonna guard you. He gonna make it rough on every single day. But Kobe just had that about him, that every day he was going to give you 110% and he was going to go at you. And he didn't respect you if you didn't go back at him. Right. That's the one thing about it. He did not respect you if you didn't go back at him. If you looked at him and just thought he was bigger than God, or, you know, I can't, he didn't have no respect for you. But if you went at him, you know, he had all the respect for you. And that's the thing that I loved about him: his competitive nature, his passion for the game, his passion for life, his passion for his family. I mean, those 2 years, like I said, Rich, I'll never forget those two. As bad as our team was, that was the best 2 years I've ever had as a coach.
That's an amazing statement, Byron. You're someone who won multiple rings, played with Magic, as you said, coached in the NBA Finals, and yet your two best years coaching were those. A really great message that it is not all about the wins and losses, and especially with someone like Kobe Bryant. He was known as such a winner, but it's what he gave us all along the way that we really want to celebrate today. It's about so much more than just the titles. Byron, thank you so much for joining us today. Excellent to see you, my friend. Up next, we're going to hear from Pau Gasol as well, opening up about his close friendship with Kobe, his experience, of course, in the aftermath of Kobe's passing with Vanessa and the girls. This is The Jump. Stick with us.
Spinning in the lane, back for Gasol, pretty pass.
Kobe Bryant liked to say, he didn't have time for friends.
Gasol the drive, kicks it out, Bryant just gets it off in time and puts it in.
Friends hang sometimes, he'd say. Banners hang forever. But Pau Gasol was a friend, and much more.
Fue mi hermano, y siempre, siempre será mi hermano.
Midway through Kobe's MVP season in 2008, the Lakers traded for Pau Gasol, the 7-foot Spaniard they hoped was the missing piece to their next NBA championship.
And I was like, oh, I'm in heaven. Because I didn't have that. Guys could double team me with no consequence, and now they couldn't do that.
The first game in New Jersey, he was talking to me in Spanish and all the play calls and the coverages to gain my trust, to connect with me.
Amo este juego, lo amo. Un amo sincero, una cosa pura.
He would give me that look and be like, hey, you ready? Just to engage me.
Oh.
When you have that connection with a guy that is not gonna settle for anything else than excellence, that's a strong motivator.
He's always very nice, very white swan, and then a black swan.
He was very demanding because he expected everyone to put in the same effort as he was, and that was unrealistic.
Bryant for three, puts it in!
Pau witnessed that Mamba mentality time and time again.
I mean, that's the Achilles.
He could barely make it to the free throw line.
Got it.
I'm going to walk on this torn Achilles by myself to the locker room. Who does that?
In their six seasons together in L.A., Kobe and Powell built an undeniable chemistry.
Dish to Gasol, lefty layup, good!
We did that perfectly. You're not behind me, you're not in front of me. You're right there, parallel with me.
The Lakers repeat back-to-back titles.
They pushed each other to two championships. But the bond was so much deeper than basketball.
It's a little tied back. He's the big brother that I never had. He had a very kind side, a very loving side. And I think that's something that I influenced him to, in a way. I said, it's okay to be normal, to be vulnerable or soft at times. He was trying to be the best father in the world. He embraced his daughters. That kindness, that softness, the love from a dad to a daughter.
For Pau, losing Kobe and his daughter Gianna was almost impossible to process.
I still didn't want to believe it. You still thought that Kobe could have gotten out of that accident by his own feet. You know, he was that invincible.
In the world of grief that followed, Pau and his wife, Catherine, knew what his brother would want him to do.
We wanted to be close to Vanessa and the kids.
Being there for him as much as possible.
Pau sent flowers for Kobe and Vanessa's 19th wedding anniversary in April, and a cake for Gianna's birthday in May. Then in September, Pau became a father for the first time.
My daughter's full name is Elizabeth Gianna Gasol. To have Gianna's name, remembering her and having her present, it represents so much. I'm just gonna try to be a good father to my daughter, a good uncle to his daughters.
Boom!
Good job, Nani. A good brother to his wife.
Fue mi hermano y siempre, siempre será mi hermano.
So beautiful. We now welcome in Ramona Shelburne, who just did an exceptional job with that piece. Ramona, you've spent so many years covering Kobe in L.A. What did you learn about Kobe, the man, not just the player, in talking to Pau? You covered both of these guys, and yet that conversation seems like it brought so much.
I mean, to be honest, Rachel, like, I covered them up close, and I never realized how close they were until after Kobe passed, and we saw all of the social media posts from Vanessa and Kat and Pau and just the interactions that they've had. And I couldn't, you know, I was like, wow, I was up close to it and I didn't know. And it reminded me a little of Kobe's relationship with Michael Jordan, where we kind of realized how close they were after Michael gave that eulogy. And I respect that because he kept something for himself, right? Like, he shared so much of himself with all of us and with the world, but he did keep certain relationships for himself out of the public eye. And I respect that. And I think it's beautiful. And, you know, for me is, I think what we learned over the past year, as we've all been telling stories, is just who he was as a man. I mean, he used to, like, email me when he was writing. Remember, he would write those stories from the Players Tribune and he would say, what do you think of these stories I've been writing? I go, you know, I was like polite. I was like, yeah, that's really good. Yeah.
It's lovely.
He goes,
no,
what do you really think? Right? And he's like, I was like, you want me to, like, read it and red pen it? And he goes, yes, red pen the SH out of it. Right? And he wanted a real critique. And because he wanted to be a great writer and he wanted to know what it took. And I remember we were doing a story kind of in his last year. And he really wanted to know what my writing process was like because he was transitioning into that world. And so I told him I usually like to I get a soundtrack kind of. I pick songs that fit the theme of the story, and I get a little method actor about it. And I go, tell me some of the songs you listen to. And he hit me back, like, immediately. And Rachel, you wouldn't even believe the songs. Like, it'd be Trans-Siberian Orchestra and Sia. It would be Kanye, it would be Tribe Called Quest. It was like all over the map, but it was the types of songs that he would listen to when he was in his zone and he was pushing himself. And the stories he wanted to hear from me about being a writer were, that's what he got the most excited about. And he's like, I want to hear that because that's when I hear the passion in your voice. And I just knew that's who he was. I mean, that's Kobe the man. He got excited about things that other people were passionate about, and he wanted to help you take that passion that was inside of you and make the most of it.
Yeah, I mean, Ramona and I got a chance to talk on the phone the other night for about 45 minutes while she was finishing up this piece with Pau. And one thing Pau said, and I told Ramona that night too, Kobe was so cool on the bus, in the locker room, so chill. And I used to tell Kobe, like, yo, why can't the rest of the world see this dude? And he said, these MFers can't see that side of me. You know what I mean? Like, he always wanted to keep that Mamba wall up, but it was beautiful to see that, you know, Pau used to, you know, kind of work on him too. Like, it's okay. Like, you're still a bad man, but you could still be, you know, show the world the rest of the other side. But he just, until he was done, he wouldn't do it.
Yeah, for me, I am so jealous of everybody that got to know Kobe in that sense, because when I got to know Kobe, it was just straight laser focus. It's like, I want to be the best. And he was like a machine. He was a robot. He was pretty much the Terminator. And he lets some of us in, but not the degree that he's let these other guys in. So I'm so jealous of all these other guys. I got to know him a little bit, but not like these other guys. And I say it again, I am jealous of you, Matt. I'm jealous, man.
Well, it's fun. You know, we work so much with Tracy McGrady, and as I mentioned earlier in this show, they were so close when they both came in, close in age, coming right from high school. They spent summers together, staying at each other's parents' houses, and then there was that decade or so of Kobe's tunnel vision. And then after, Robert, as you said, they got to know each other, having kids on the AAU circuit together and talking about just rekindling that deep, deep friendship, the people who got to be let in by Kobe, like Powell, like T-Mac, like Matt, so many of us who were lucky to be around him, not just at the beginning, but also at the end. Ramona, you certainly were right there. So thank you for joining us. When we return, we will also have the man, the myth, the legend, the truth, Paul Pierce joining us as we unveil the 24 greatest Mamba moments of all time. We are continuing to celebrate the life of Kobe Bryant. Stick with us.
This is Kobe Bryant.
This is Jam Session coming at you.
Final seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang!
Are you made for this?
These are the type of moments that I live for.
You gotta show it.
Five of them. I told you you're gonna get it, man.
You gotta show them.
Welcome back to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols alongside Robert Horry, Matt Barnes, and we now welcome in the MVP of the 2008 finals, of course, took place between the Celtics and Kobe's Lakers, future Hall of Famer, Paul Pierce. What's up, Paul? Thank you for being with us. We had to move to the big part of the set because we got Paul with us now. Paul, two NBA finals you played against Kobe. You guys played against each other, though, 39 times. Wow. That Celtics-Lakers rivalry, you two were the faces there. But I want to take you back to the very beginning. I'm going to ask you the same question I asked these guys, so many current players. What do you remember about the very first time you faced Kobe Bryant?
Oh, man. I'll never forget this. So when I first came into the league, I played small forward my whole life. I came into the league, I got moved to two guard, right? And so now I'm guarding Kobe, and I just remember he stole a ball from me and he went down. I couldn't catch him. Usually I'm like, all right, I could catch him. You know, I was pretty fast as a youngster. I just thought how fast he was. And I was just like, every time they got the rebound, he gone. I'm like, I can't keep up with this dude, man. I'm like, it made me reevaluate my position. You know what? I think I'm gonna have to go back to small forward. Because playing the two guard, he was just so fast. Like, man, you know what? Man, we need to make a trade. I'm gonna go back to the small forward. I don't want to have to deal with this for the next 10 years.
Kobe could do that to you, right, guys?
Yes, he could.
I was incredible. I was like, wow.
Absolutely. All right. Well, to honor the legend of Kobe, we have decided to spend the rest of the show counting down the top 24 Mamba moments. And some of these guys who played with and against him, who knew him best, are going to chime in here. So number 24, Kobe winning the 97 dunk contest as a rookie, people. Watch this.
Couldn't tell nothing.
I'm with the swagger already.
Hey, you couldn't tell that dude nothing.
Fresh out of high school, getting the dunk contest, man.
See, he had them legs.
This is when the stars still competed in the dunk contest. Right. This is what you gotta love. I mean,
thank you.
Man, you gotta love that.
I think a lot of people forget that Kobe had hops back in the day.
Oh, yeah. You're not gonna forget watching this. Number 23, Kobe performing a spike block on Ray Allen. Ooh.
Like, come on, man. That was like big brother versus little brother right there. That's how I do my son Prince right now.
Oh, you gonna get the steal? I'm gonna pay you back, though. Pay you back. Check that.
Talk about Hobbs, brother. Look how long he was up there.
Waiting for it.
Right?
And we all know Ray got hops, too. He just couldn't jump with the Mamba.
Kobe was like, I'll wait. It's all good. I'll just be up here. You get here whenever you can. Number 22, Kobe on Dwight Howard. Take a listen.
This was ugly.
It's because of this man, Kobe Bryant, can take over. Posterizes Dwight Howard.
It's the first time I ever got dunked on, and it had to be Kobe Bryant. So, every time I see him come down the lane, I just get flashbacks, and hopefully it won't happen again.
I baptize him.
I turned him into a defensive force.
Here's another look from a different angle. This one right into your living room.
Ooh, that was tough.
Man, just saddle someone like that, man.
My only thing is, how is this number 22?
Like, it's going to get good. About to get good.
That would have been my number one.
Man, that was tough.
Oh, my gosh.
Get to the paint. And think about this. It's like most guys are going to try, like, better not. I'm just going to ride this one out. And Kobe just rolled him out.
Number 21, guys, Kobe's clutch buckets against the Blazers in 2004.
That's the Kobe stopper, ain't it?
Oh, yeah, that was crazy.
Matt, that's the Kobe stopper, right? Hey, oh, wait.
He said he was a Kobe stopper, man, so many times in practice.
Man, oh, my God, this was crazy.
I apologize to everyone from Portland for reopening this trauma, but it was incredible.
Oh,
beautiful.
Ruben remembers.
Number 20, Kobe's one-handed alley-oop against the Sixers in 2000.
Oh my goodness.
Nasty.
That was crazy. That was about as bad as a pass you can throw.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say that. That pass was awesome, B-Shaw. B-Shaw made him a highlight.
He was throwing it to Shaq.
That's how you get good alley-oops, though. The worse the pass, the better the highlight.
On the opposite side of the rim he was on.
And for Kobe to go get it, though, you know, most people are like, it's a bad pass. Right. But he still goes and gets it.
I'm sorry, Alan. All right, number 19, Kobe's baseline dunk against the T-Wolves in 2003. Take a listen to this one.
Oh, man, I remember this on tickets. Oh, man.
Come on, man.
Oh, my. When you dunk on the big ticket, then, oh, my God.
Hey, he's got a couple dunks on me like this. I'm just hoping they didn't make the list.
Ooh.
That was tough.
You know, as I'm watching this, I'm like, did he just dunk that?
Windmill.
Let me get
that one against the Knicks, too.
So.
Shout out to our friend Kevin Harlan. Great call on that game. So many more. Number 18, Kobe hits a turnaround three with his offhand, people.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Man,
I don't even know if I've attempted a jump shot.
I remember when he broke his right hand. That's when he was at UCLA. I'm telling you, he went through a whole workout like he was a left-handed player that used to just.
You would watch him in practice. Some days he just come to practice. Oh, I'm just going to do everything left-handed. You look at him like, really, dude? And he getting buckets left-handed.
He did it.
He was hitting them. Number 17, Kobe dunking on. Yes. Yao Ming.
Get up, big fella.
Over the Great Wall. Not a lot of people went over the Great Wall, but Kobe certainly did.
And I'm just always there in the background, just watching in amazement at the things you can do. It's always so great when you can see it live and watch these moments and be like, dude, really?
Right.
Robert, I am going to point out, you did more than watch. You have 7 rings to prove it, several with Kobe.
You love watching Kobe, man. It was some of the things he would do, and Matt knows, it's things he used to do in practice.
Incredible.
And you're like, wow. So
are you.
I'm laughing so much to myself remembering, and you guys would go through these moments too where, you know, you guys were, it was a little bit, especially early on, right, trying to prove things to people, and the older guys trying to basically show them, hey, kid, we're still here, and yet then he would pull off some big move. I've had so many guys tell me, and they'd be like, all right.
Yeah. For me, it was so many moves, and I think a lot of times for us back in the day, we used to have beer in the locker room.
Yes, I remember.
And Kobe was a rook, and everybody used to mess with him like, oh, man, you got rid of the beer. Get out of here, you rook. But, you know, he used to, like, look at us and say, all right, I'm just taking it out on you the next day in practice, and he would just go at you. So it was
funny. That is exactly what would happen. All right, coming up next, our 16 most memorable mama moments. Keep it locked to the jump. We will finish up this countdown when we get back. Stick with us. Welcome back. We are counting down the most memorable Mamba moments on this very special day, celebrating the life of Kobe Bryant. Here is number 16. Kobe taking the Jazz to school in 2002, guys.
Footwork.
That's what you're talking about, Robert, right? He wanted that Hakeem footwork.
Oh, yeah. You know, he's one of the best at doing this. And a lot of guys at home try to mimic this, but it ain't the same.
No clue.
Number 15, Kobe dunking on Ben Wallace during preseason of his rookie year. Sound up on this one.
Did he try to take a charge?
In Vegas.
Ben Wallace.
Here we got a dribble drive, change of direction by Bryant.
Ben never tried to take a charge after that.
And then stood over him.
To see, and you talk about elevation.
chick, he went up high school the kid.
Yeah. Preseason. Rookie year.
People weren't scared of Ben until he got the throw.
That is not a charging foul.
That was tough.
Amazing. Number 14, Kobe's buzzer beater against the Heat, 2009.
I like it. Ooh, got him.
Ooh.
Great shot.
He didn't call bank. He called gang.
Some said Paul Pierce.
He called gang.
Classic.
Paul, you used to go shot for shot launching with Kobe. You knew he would always come back at you, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Without question. Come on, man.
Great contest.
He came into Boston and took 41 shots.
Wow.
Come on. I'm like, what's going on?
Number 13, Kobe's MVP revenge dunk on Steve Nash in the 2006 playoffs.
Oh.
Wow.
I like the little hang on the rim.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And Steve's just like, hey, I'm down. Good. Thank you.
That's my MVP trophy. Steve, you know I deserved it.
Number 12, Kobe showing off in MSG in 2003. Remember, this was during the nine-game streak of 40-point games for Kobe.
Yes.
Windmill baseline dunk right here.
Man, it was incredible, this streak he went on. But you know, the thing about it, we just let go on it then. Just go, young fella. We win and go. Do your thing. Come on, Spree. Come on.
40 point. Number 11, Kobe's bang out in the 2002 finals. Robert, you remember this, right?
Oh, of course. Right here, you know, Kobe was going.
Oh, like, wow.
You got murdered.
Looking over at B. Scott, talking trash, you know, his mentor.
That was sweet. You guys swept him, right?
Yeah, we swept him.
Sol McCollum, come on. I think he retired after that.
Yeah, we swept him. No biggie.
Oh, my gosh. Come on, Kobe.
Just Jason Kidd. Whatever.
You know, Kobe was like, we're going to beat these guys. I'm just going to get my numbers. I'm going to get numbers. Where are my numbers at, Cookie?
Jason Kidd. Number 10, Kobe improvising on the break against the Nuggets in 2003.
They need some help.
Ooh, good pass.
This was crazy. If you did this to me, man, I mean, we got to get into a conversation.
There are so many of these moments because
something's got to happen.
This is come on.
Hey, the thing about this is Kobe and I had this thing where I'd be like, Kobe, watch the press. And Kobe's eyes would light up. Because he knew I saw something, and I would do that baseball pass to him. He would go down and dunk it.
Come on.
Look,
behind the back of the beard.
Number 9, Kobe's first All-Star appearance in 98.
No,
you can't 360 on me. Something got to happen, man.
Oh, that's Corey. Wow.
All right, now we're moving on. Number 9, Kobe's first All-Star appearance in 98. Let's go.
98.
This was against MJ, remember?
This is what they call when idols become rivals.
Yep. Mm. Woo. This was amazing in the Last Dance documentary to kind of get some of the behind the scenes in this from MJ's perspective, right?
He was not bashful in his All-Star.
He was not.
Full speed ahead.
He came out his thing.
Full speed ahead.
And you heard Steve Kerr talking about, of course, you know, how much he just asked MJ a million questions all the time, even while they were playing. Absolutely incredible. All right, guys, we've got the top 8 Mamba moments coming up right after this final break. First, though, here is Michael Jordan at Kobe's memorial service talking about their relationship. This was so, so moving.
In the game of basketball, in life, as a parent, Kobe left nothing in the tank. He left it all on the floor. Everyone always wanted to talk about the comparisons between he and I. I just wanted to talk about Kobe. Now he's got me. I'll have to look at another crime meme for the Knicks. Years. That is what Kobe Bryant does to me.
The Dallas Mavericks tweeting today, remembering Kobe and Gianna 1 year later, number 24 will never again be worn by a Dallas Maverick. Our thoughts are with the Bryant family today and always. That's very special. Really, really nice of the Mavericks to do. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still hanging with Paul Pierce, Robert Ori, Matt Barnes. And guys, we're continuing our celebration of Kobe's life with a countdown of the most memorable Mamba moments of his career. We have reached the final eight. Number eight, Kobe hits two clutch buckets against the Suns in the 2006 playoffs. Robert, what you got here?
Well, you know, look how Devin George, get this out of my hand. Get it to the guy you know who's going to score. Yeah. So he did a smart thing there.
Yeah. You knew what was going to happen here.
In and out. Hey, let him get on the two. Shot off. Come on.
What was it like as an opponent when you knew before it was going to happen what he was going to do and he did it anyway?
Bad feeling.
Bad feeling. He beat us a few times.
Number seven, 2000 yeah. Finals Game 4, Lakers-Pacers. Shaq fouled out. Kobe took over on what he called a throbbing ankle to take a 3-1 lead over Indiana.
Yeah, this was after the Jaylen did the sneak under, you know, had he missed game three, but he took over in game four and just showed him what, you know, we could do without Shaq, and Kobe was just amazing in this series. And thank you, Kobe, for my three, buddy.
Three of seven. Must be nice. Just saying. Everyone on this panel has that championship jewelry, except for me. All right, number six, 2005, Kobe outscoring the entire Dallas Mavericks team. Maybe this is why they retired his number. At the end of the third quarter, Kobe had 62 points. The entire Mavs team had 61.
Wow.
See, after this game, all the kids on the video game started using one player to score all the points. Mm-hmm.
Changed the game on the video game?
Changed the video game.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, I'm going to just go out and score 60 with Kobe. And then they tried to do it with the other players, and you couldn't.
Right.
This is one of those games where, like, no, if somebody asked you, did you play for the Dallas Mavericks in 2005? Like, nope, no, I didn't. Nope, I didn't. No, I didn't.
Number five, game seven of the 2000 Western Conference Finals. Kobe finding Shaq for that iconic alley-oop.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Remember, I was in my dorm room in UCLA watching this, man. We were going crazy.
I was going crazy, too. You know, this pass, I was like, no, that's too high. But Diesel went up and got that.
Top of the square.
That Portland team was loaded.
They were tough.
Yeah.
They were
yes,
tough.
It was. Number four, game seven of the 2010 finals. I'm sorry, Paul. Kobe earning his fifth ring after beating the Celtics.
Man, we was up like 15 in this game, too, man. Come on.
Dr. Ron Artest.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, hey, let me tell you something. It was either, all right, we're going to double Kobe or leave it to Artest.
That's a no-brainer.
Hats off to you. Hats off to you. Hats off to you, Ron.
Hey, pass me the ball.
I remember it just like yesterday. I helped on Kobe. I mean, you got to.
You have to. Come on. Number three, April 12th, 2013. We all remember this. Kobe rupturing his left Achilles tendon against the Warriors, then walked back on the court to hit not one, but two free throws. That was tough.
2013?
Wow. Him to go out there, and it was just a tough 2 years for him, the knee, the Achilles, but he was a fighter. He was a competitor. He came back to knock down these. Man, I probably sat down on the floor and like, y'all come get me.
Number two, Kobe dropping 60 in his final NBA game in 2016. This is incredible. Robert, you were at Staples Center that night, too. What was it like for you?
Man, it was like the playoffs and the finals. This atmosphere was beyond all of that because everybody came out for this game, and it was the hottest ticket ever. I mean, it was amazing, the stars that were in the stands, and to see him drop that. Because you looked at the first half, you're like, oh, he's not playing that well, but he's like, you know what? This is the last half I would ever play, and he turned it up.
Wow. Number one, Kobe scoring 81 points against the Raptors in 2006. One of the greatest single-game performances in NBA history. He finished with 81 on 28 of 46 shooting.
Beautiful.
Can I get 81 olives with my vodka, please?
No, Paul!
How many olives would you like? 81.
Man, thinking about the family too, not only Vanessa and the girls, but obviously his mom and dad, his sisters, man. Praying for you guys.
Absolutely. And this is a day where, again, we wanted to celebrate Kobe's life, Gianna's life, the legacy they both leave for us. And I know you guys are going to remember him, not in death, but like this, all these highlights that we've seen, that face that's behind y'all right now. That Kobe, that smile is going to live forever. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. Matt Barnes, Robert Horry, Paul Pierce, so many of the guests who joined us from Kobe and Gianna's lives. Their legacies will live on forever. We send our best wishes to Vanessa Bryant, his daughter, and their families.
Give me 81 olives with my vodka soda.